the EFL. It's the Football League podcast that doesn't break for internationals. Coming up, Crawley Crisis, Wickham Wowers, Leagues 1 and 2. This is your moment. And scouting for Champ Champs. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. Yeah, no rest for us. League 1 and League 2 will be our focus this week. We will chat a little championship later in the glorious return of the scouting report too. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I am joined, as ever, by Sam Parkin. How are you doing, Sam?
Very good. Very good. Enjoying the sunshine. Sent one of my lads off today in a QPR training top.
No vintage or current?
Current. No winter jacket required. Looking the part. Sun hat. First time of the season.
All I would say is keep hold of this clobber that you're buying for your kids, because I don't know about you, Adrian Clark, but I had a load of shirts as a lad, particularly as a teenager, that would be worth a fortune now, that were lost to various house moves or just in the sands of time. And I wouldn't say I think about it every day, but certainly many times in a year.
Yes, yeah, no, I've fallen foul of this myself. I even bought a vintage Ipswich shirt that I owned back in the day, but I wanted to buy it, so I've paid an extortionate price for it. Only to find out it was made questionable as to whether it was legit. No, there's a box in the garage of kids' kits from this era that will hopefully bank me fortune in the years to come. Probably won't, but there you go.
Yeah, I keep telling my wife it's our pension. But until that kicks in, we can tell you that our partners Quinbet have an offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. Okay, we are going to start today, as we usually do, with some managerial movement chat. And specifically around Rob Elliott, who has been sacked by Crawley Town with the club 12 points adrift of safety in League One. Only got the job in October after Scott Lindsay left for MK Dons. Only won 6 of his 33 matches in charge, losing 19 of them. Louis Story is filling in as interim coach. Sort of feels fair enough, Clarkie, to me, albeit not exactly that classy from Crawley, given that the statement bidding him farewell was a whole 62 words long, I counted.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal, wasn't it? I mean, the vibe, I think, among Crawley fans is too little, too late. What's the point? They're going to go down anyway. And they will go down because they can't defend. They conceded 71 goals this season, the most by 9 in the division. That said, I think, expected goals has them down to concede loads less than that, so there's been some good goals against them. There's been a lot of mistakes. But, I mean, they've been good fun, haven't they, under Elliott? I mean, we've had a 5-3, a 2-4-3s, a 4-4. The issue is lately we've had some tonkings, haven't we? They got smashed, I think, 5-1 and 4-1 in their last couple of away games, and that's not a great look. Yeah, I just think that he was just so attack-minded. He just maybe neglected the defensive aspect. They took a lot of risks. And most modern coaches want to take risks. And they're prepared to accept that mistakes will lead to concessions. They, as long as the players learn. And I think maybe there's been too many of those mistakes, not enough learnings. And maybe he himself made a few errors as well. I mean, just seeing someone like Will Swan, you'll know him, Matt, on loan. Is he on loan? I think he's on loan. Striker, anyway, isn't he, Will Swan? Playing at wing back on a number of occasions for Crawley just didn't feel like a wise decision to me. So they're a young team, a brave team, but ultimately maybe the style cost them too many results, and he's paid the price for that.
Sam, you were straight on the WhatsApp with two simple words, Scott Lindsay. I thought, wow, that's really lazy. Then I looked at the odds. He's odds on favourite to make an immediate return.
I was only being silly, to be honest. I didn't realise that when I typed it out. I'd probably be a little bit surprised for him to go back at this juncture. I think his stock's probably a little higher. And we were probably very critical of the ownership way back when, prior to their promotion. But I think, maybe he would want to work in a more stable environment where you're not going to have your players sold and you're basically trying to unearth bargains, which he did incredibly well. They scour the world, it would seem now, for these players, probably data driven, and they struck gold, didn't they, under Scott Lindsay? And not to diminish his achievements, but the likes of Liam Kelly, Dan Orsi, Adai, Maguire, Will Wright, all these players that were just incredible during that promotion, obviously all sold. And Rob Elliott has basically had to try and knit together a new team. And I think Clarkey's bang on, really. There's greater margin for error, isn't there, if you're trying to dominate the football and take risks with players who are being given an opportunity, a lot of them in the EFL for the first time. So no surprise that it hasn't gone to plan this season at the higher level. 16 goals conceded in those last four away games. And I think, you know, considering Huddersfield hadn't scored, had they not, at home this season, to ship five is probably quite damning. And my last little note, Rob Elliott, Mike Williamson, Scott Lindsay, managerial merry-go-round, none of them in a job anymore. So yeah, just shows you the stock they were all in when you consider the jobs they did in their kind of previous roles. I don't know where they go from here. I would imagine, similar to some of the appointments of recent times, it'll be maybe a little bit left field, maybe someone out of non-league. I've seen a few names banded around. Ryan Mason, I think I read this morning. What's the good Brighton fullback in the first team at the moment? Young lad, Hinchelwood, his dad, who I think has had a few positions. I think he's at York City now, but has had a few roles down on the South Coast. So he would be the type of appointment, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Just going back to the style issue, obviously the possession, they have loads of it. They're brilliant at passing, aren't they? I think only Posh and Birmingham have had more passes. But the key thing is they keep getting caught. So they're dominating teams, they're pushing players forward, they're losing it, and then they're getting punished over and over and over again. I think that by some distance they've conceded the most goals from fast breaks this season, and I don't think Elliott was going to compromise. So in the end, that proved costly.
Yeah, as Adrian says, 12 points adrift of safety, looking like they're going down, but they do play Bristol Rovers on Saturday, who are the team just above the dotted line, so a chance to reduce that, maybe. Just the one midweek match for us to look back on, but what a doozy it was. Wickham eventually triumphing 3-2 at Rotherham after a bonkers added time period. All five goals in the game came after the hour mark, with Wickham coming from a goal down. Means the Chairboys go back into the top two ahead of Wrexham on goal difference. Sam, you flicked over for the end of this game, and we're pleased that you did.
Yeah, old 1,000 blows on Disney has just tailed off for me after a very promising first couple of episodes. So we actually switched off mid-ep the other night, and I'd seen it was on, so I flicked on for the last half an hour, I think at 1-1, Rotherham in the ascendancy, and Wickham didn't play well at all, I don't think, for a large portion of this game. Different shape, three centre-halves in for Wickham for this one. So I think a few eyebrows raised when the Wickham supporters saw the team selection. It was quite conservative, and for the majority, Rotherham deserved their lead. Norris mistake for the opening Sibley goal. Kone, brilliant header from Leahy delivery. Leahy supplied Bradley with the goal that nudged them ahead. And Wickham all of a sudden started playing some lovely stuff. They really did. Kone's assist for Kodua's third was a thing of beauty. Where would Wickham have been had they had him against Wrexham in that massive game last time out? I think that was a huge miss for them. And then Rotherham got a goal back. Jonathan Clark-Harris, he had a goal disallowed amongst all this. It was absolute mayhem. It was like an unbelievable end to the game. You just didn't know who was going to fashion an opportunity. You didn't know what the score was going to end in. But yeah, massive victory for Wickham, not being particularly free scoring. I think the first time they scored three since Boxing Day. So yeah, I thought it was a brilliant game, brilliant ending to a game. Surprise selection, some strange permutations maybe from Mike Dodds, but the win, invaluable in the predicament they're in.
And we were speaking, Clarky, weren't we, about how it's been a strange kind of time for them, going for promotion with so many new players and a new coach in place too. This is only their second win in their last six, first on the road since January. But the fact that next up they've got back-to-back home games against Lincoln and Shrewsbury maybe gives them an opportunity to put a run together now.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah, I still fancy them. I know that they lost that big game to Wrexham, But yeah, I think with Kone, if he stays fit, I still think they can get the job done. But yeah, it is a strange situation. I think they signed too many new players in January. That's my honest opinion. I don't think they needed as many. And it maybe has impacted a little bit of the togetherness that they've had. And obviously, changing of manager is awkward as well, isn't it? As some players will be delighted, others will be disappointed. I was a big fan, by the way, of Richard Kone scoring and then dribbling the ball back to the halfway line, centre circle spot. He didn't have it under the arm. He dribbled it on the deck the whole way back to the halfway line. I absolutely love that from the boy Kone. On Rotherham, obviously disappointing season for them. It's done, isn't it? They're very mid-table. I think Evans is obviously going to just keep a beady eye on who he wants to ditch between now and the end of the season, and he'll make no bones about it. He'll tell the boys, you know, I'm watching you, and those that deliver will stay. Those that don't will go.
The owner might be thinking the same thing about him, though, given they've been so disappointed.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but they've worked well together before, haven't they? I think the owner isn't the easiest, and maybe he's found a kindred spirit in Evans. Do you know what I mean? It may be too much hassle to, and he made a big play getting him, so it'd be quite the admission to sort of ditch him, wouldn't it? They're pretty solid. I was looking at their away record. They haven't conceded more than two goals away from home to any of the top 16 this season, Rotherham. So whenever they go away, which is the toughest games, to top 16 away, they never... Well, I haven't conceded more than two goals in a single game. Do you know how many of those games they've won?
One. Three.
One. It's absolutely pitiful in terms of like their play on the ball. So, yeah, I think that that's the area they've clearly got to improve on. They've got to score more goals.
Apologies, listener, if you heard me burp then. That was completely inadvertent and is a sign of my slide into middle age. We are going to look ahead some of the weekend's games next.
That's the pod title.
All right, Wickham's win has piled the pressure on Wrexham ahead of their big game against Stockport on Saturday. Both looking for promotion out of League One at the first attempt. Wrexham only out the top two by virtue of their goal difference being seven worse than Wickham's. County are fifth with a 5-point buffer from the playoff chasers, but they're sixth off second place. Wrexham, Sam, we spoke about the disappointment of them not reaching Wembley a few weeks ago. They've really put that behind them, won three of their last four. We mentioned the big win at Wickham last weekend. Are they still second favourites to finish second for you?
Yeah, I think so. Just. I think there's been defensive stability the last few weeks. Four clean sheets in five games. I was just mulling it over this morning, actually. You know, whose shoes would you rather be in? I just think maybe that Wickham squad, as good as they've been, as impressed I've been, especially recently seeing them in the flesh. I don't know. There's just something about Phil Parkinson and that experience, I think, as well, throughout the Wrexham squad. I know that Wickham still have those kind of Gareth Ainsworth henchmen amongst them, the likes of Grimmer and McCleary. But I don't know. I think when push comes to shove, maybe I'd want to be in that Wrexham dressing room with the likes of Fletcher, Ollie Lee, Rathbone, you know, some of the guys I think that have had those promotions and the expectancy on their shoulders. Obviously, they've had a couple of disappointing results at home. They won 12 of the first 14. It was really tight. Why am I doubting that Stockport play at Edgeley Park? They do still play at Edgeley Park, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Feels like they shouldn't anymore. But one of the great throwbacks, yeah. Lost 1-0 there, Louis Barry goal. I think the one problem is, I think, pace up against Wrexham's back line. And I think in Olafe, who I'm sure, Clark, you'll mention in a minute, could be troublesome for the likes of O'Connell, who do lack a little bit of mobility. But me and Clark have seen Wrexham in the flesh. They do protect their goalkeeper, Okonkwo, pretty well, although he was called into action at Adams Park the other day to make two outstanding saves. I think it's going the other way a little bit for Wrexham at the moment. When you think that Rodriguez came in, big fanfare, I think he's provided one assist. There's obviously something gone on, or Paul Mullen, Palmer, clearly out of favour for whatever reason. We don't know, but it's going to be up to Rodriguez, it would seem. Smith, who's got two winners in his last three games, and obviously Fletcher, who's been a brilliant acquisition, coming on and affecting things off the bench. So it's in that department, I think, where they just need to find that chemistry. Smith's obviously providing a goal threat, but there's not a great deal of help in that regard. So I see this being tight, not many goals. And I think these two have been hand in hand, haven't they, the last few seasons. We've normally spoken about them together, considering their rise. But yeah, massive game. And again, I'd probably just favour Wrexham for that second automatic spot.
Bit of a dad's army vibe about the Wrexham attack, isn't there? Apart from Smith all well north of 30.
You've not listened to Football Clichés this week, Matt, have you? Because they dissected the dad's army shout and said, well, the dad's army thing, despite being old in years, they were actually very inexperienced in the field that they were deployed in. So it doesn't really work, does it, when you break it down like that?
Okay, I apologise. I will try and find a more modern reference, but I certainly can't do it off the top of my head today. Stockport Clark, it had been their first League One campaign since 2010. It'll be a brief stop. They've only scored more than once in one of their last five games. Am I being too obvious to say that would prove that they're missing Louis Barry?
Well, they definitely are. You would, wouldn't you? They need others to step up. I talked, didn't I, about Benoni Andresen, the new guy coming in and coming off the bench to make an impact. So they got him. They got Ollie Elf. That Sam referenced there, who scored a great goal in the last game, really good individual goal to win it against Bolton. That was a sort of, not a smash and grab, but they didn't create loads of chances, but they created quality chances. And yeah, I think that they do have firepower. They do have firepower. They have loads of players. They just, you know, Wootton comes off the bench a lot as well. You look at their subs bench, it's the envy of most teams, I would imagine. So I think, I wouldn't write them off. Certainly not in the playoffs. And I think they can, I don't think they'll get top two, but I think that they, in the playoffs, they'll be really hard to beat because they're defensively strong. They have faced just 93 shots on target all season. It's the same as Birmingham. You know, that's impressive. You know, they keep teams at arm's length very well. They didn't leak any at against Charlton, none at Bolton as well, who have been free scoring. So I'm absolutely with Sam here. This is going to be tight. I reckon under 2.5 goals, nailed on. Don't know which way it will go. History says the home team will win this game. But it's a great rivalry. Stockport fans have baited Wrexhams over the years, haven't they? Haven't they flown a couple of planes over the race course, like ribbing them? I'm pretty sure they have when they got promoted as champions and Wrexham didn't. That was in the National League and I think in League Two as well. So yeah, there's a nice little rivalry here. Just wanted to just big up a couple of the centre-halves, Brad Hills and Ethan Pye. I've mentioned Ethan Pye before. He's 22. Brad Hills is on loan from Norwich, 21, having a really good time at the moment. And with Fraser Horsfall out recently, they've had to form a pair. You know, 21-year-old, 22-year-old. And I've just outlined how good their stats are in terms of conceding goals. So I think that, you know, they're both really good on the ball, but excellent defenders. Yeah, they're showing a lot of metal and a lot of strength and a lot of defensive nous for two very young centre-halves. And there's not many managers out there that would pair a 21 and a 22-year-old at the top end of League One, but Challoner is doing it. So fair play to him.
Yeah, two good defences in terms of the goals against columns. Wrexham conceded 30 goals from an XG against of 45.12, greatest difference in the division. So slightly fortunate, maybe. I know keeping clean sheets latterly, but that caught me a little bit on the hop. So, you know, maybe there is a certain degree of openness about them at times, which Stockport will be hoping to profit from. But yeah, I think a tight game decided by maybe a front man showing a little bit of brilliance.
Golden Girls, Last of the Summer Wine, One Foot in the Grave. Any of those doing anything for you?
Golden Girls, just purely because I haven't heard it for about 15 years.
Yeah, easy to parlay it into Golden Goals as well, isn't it, I suppose. All right, elsewhere, back in August, we might well have assumed Peterborough v Charlton in mid-March will be a crucial game in the race for promotion. Alas, that's only true for one of the participants, and Adrian, it ain't the home side. Darren Ferguson's fourth spell in charge. They're going to Wembley, but they're also 18th. There's been a little uptick of late. He's hammered his players this season. Has he lost his posh touch?
If you'd asked me a few weeks ago, I probably would have said yeah, but they sort of got their way to Wembley, didn't they, by beating Wrexham, and then they've gone on a little unbeaten run, haven't they? I think they're six unbeaten. They've only let in three. So he's sort of turning it around a little bit for Darren Ferguson. It's been a horrible season for Posh. Awful. Injuries haven't helped. They lost Poku for ages. He's back now, which is great news for them. But I think they're, if they're not safe, one more win will probably do it for Posh. So I don't think they need to worry about relegation now. It is about maybe winning that trophy at Wembley. I mean, it's going to be hard to beat Birmingham, but you know, they could. In this game, I think they could do with sort of a morale-boosting win ahead of that final, because looking at their record against the top 10 this season... It's just shocking. This is Peterborough. Okay, Peterborough, big fish in this league. Record against the top 10, pathetic. 1-1, drawn 3, lost 10. Conceded a lot of goals in those games as well. So, yeah, they could do with a sort of a scalp ahead of that Wembley showpiece. Obviously, Poku being there will help them. But they are missing Kyprianou, who's on international duty with Cyprus. And the left-back, Teo Eden, who scored last time out, he got sent off as well. So he's out as well. And yeah, in midfield, Archie Collins is probably not having the season that he was hoping for. It's been sort of maybe a backward step for him this year. So who's going to partner him? That's a big question ahead of the game. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's all about pace, isn't it, up front for them? Ricky J. Jones, Mothersill. You know, they've been using Heaven of late as well. But Charlton are in form, as Sam will be telling you very, very shortly. So, yeah, I'd make Charlton favourites here. One eye on Wembley and all that.
Surprised to see, Sam, this is Charlton's fifth consecutive season in League One. They haven't reached the playoffs in any of those campaigns. They start the weekend fourth, 5 points off second. Is it just about cementing that playoff spot, or is there any chance that they give Wrexham and Wickham a headache?
Yeah, I think that'd be difficult. But, you know, they're one of the form sides. Incredible turnaround. Probably spoke about it on one or two of the previous podcasts. Last time I saw them in the flesh, they were woeful. But that was the start of this incredible turnaround, 44 points from the last 20 games. I mean, that is automatic promotion form over, you know, almost half of the season, which is incredible. That, you know, continuity, I think, in selection has been really helpful. They haven't had probably go-to front players to guarantee them goals, but there's been players stepping up at certain times. Godden most recently with that double against Wigan. And that really... formidable back line that kind of picks itself. He had to tinker a little bit with Edwards out the other day, so Small moved over to the left hand side. Tenai Watson came in, kind of right wing back role. More about him later, I think, Matt, in the podcast today, but did really well after not having too much game time. So even if they're slightly disrupted, players coming in, playing their part, that dual kind of anchor midfield of Doherty and Coventry, really good again. And this is one of the best defences now in the division against one of the worst defences, clearly, in Peterborough, who have shipped goals throughout the season. But as Clarkey rightly says, with Poku, Iombian, Mothersill, there's so much talent there that maybe just hasn't quite clicked. You know, we've been used to their front players being so devastating across the last few seasons. At the moment, they're not particularly free scoring, but they absolutely have it in their armoury to turn the switch on. So yeah, I make Charlton favourites for this one because of the form, but you know that Posh have got it in them to turn it on offensively. So yeah, really intrigued to see how it goes. I expect Charlton to get after them if they do try and play. Yeah. One of the best teams without the ball in the division, no question, especially closing in the final third. So yeah, Charlton, incredible run, and yeah, surely favourites for this one.
In League Two, Walsall been doing a decent impression of a waiter carrying some jelly on a plate on a cruise ship in rough waters of late. They're wobbling, is what I mean. A trip to Gillingham might be a good way to stabilise things for Saddlers. Then, what about Gillingham to start with, Adrian? 19th, not in danger of going down. John Coleman appointed starter Jan. He's won 2 of 13. I have a theory that appointing managers on short-term contracts very, very rarely works. And this is going to be the case study that I would use to illustrate my point.
It's a good point. You know, decently made, I'll say that. I'll start with a great stat. Gillingham have conceded 4 less goals than Walsall. There you go. No one, you wouldn't have thought that, would you? I mean, it's crazy given their league positions. But you know, so that side of it, absolutely fine. It is going forward that they've really struggled. I think open play goals and set piece goals are about level, which is not great at this stage of the season either, is it really? What he's sort of landed on at the moment, Coleman, is like a 3-5-2 or 3-4-1-2 with Nevitt, who's really a striker playing at 10, behind Hawkins, who can be a centre-back, but is a centre-forward as well, alongside Gbode, who's a young lad with loads of pace up front. So they've got the big man, the quickie, and a sort of bit as a player with a bit more culture, and they're picking up a bit. It was a great win, wasn't it, against Bradford? I don't think anyone thought that they would beat the Bantams, not in the form that they've been in. So yeah, no, this has been an interesting game. I think given that Gills are so hard to score against, I think 3 clean sheets in the last 4, and that they beat Bradford at home recently, they're fancying themselves here. You know, there's a little bit of a, I wouldn't say feel-good factor, but because they're not going to go down Gillingham, I think they can just take the odd scalp or two here between now and the end of the season. Coleman has said this week that he realises he's got to be a bit more entertaining. He's got to score more goals. They've got to, if he wants the job full-time, he's got to make them more fun to watch, get the fans back in the ground. I don't know if they'll go for it here, but if they can get a win here, it might bring a few more back to the old Priestfield, mightn't it?
I do. Fascinated, Sam, by the fact that Walsall had the opportunity to postpone this game. They got 3 players, Tommy Simpkin, Liam Gordon and David Akagbu, specifically on international duty. Why do you think that they've chosen not to do that? Is it a case of like not wanting to backload a load of games onto the end of the season or not go too long without playing a match?
Can you give me those names again? The goalkeeper?
Tommy Simpkin, Liam Gordon and David Akagbu.
Well, Liam Gordon, Gibson, Gordon. No wonder I kept calling him Gibson. I've got it written down Gibson in my my little notepad here. I did that the other night, live on the telly. He has played a lot of football for a start, and he played at Bromley. So I think given that there was rotation in that previous game, that could come into it. And also Sam Hornby played in goal, which just threw absolutely everyone, considering Simpkins pretty much been a mainstay throughout the season. So I think inevitably with the recent results, Matt Saddler's had to give a few of the fringe players some more minutes. He did that at Bromley, and that's probably going to be in keeping with the next few games. It's one of, I think, many ingredients as to why there's been a bit of a decline in terms of results at Walsall. I think absolutely the main one has to be the loss of Nathan Lowe. And we're talking about a player who had probably elevated Walsall from a very good team to an outstanding team, possibly the best player in the division at the time when he was recalled by Stoke, 17 goals. But I think watching him, he gave so much more than just the goals as well. Assists, but turning average balls into good balls, keeping the ball in the final third. And the knock-on effect has been that the defence has been under more pressure in the last dozen games or whatever because the ball's not staying in the final third. Unfortunately for Matt Saddler, I think Ellis Harrison has a lot of the characteristics of Nathan Lowe, albeit an older lad. He's now injured at Bromley. Amachi came on, centre forward who they'd signed from Bromley and got one of the goals along with Jamil Matt. So it may be a really physical front pair in that Matt Saddler goes with in this game against Gillingham. But yeah, I think a lot of ingredients. I think the amount of minutes, which I alluded to a few moments ago, talking about the internationals, that the majority of the starting players have had to play has had that knock-on effect. Most players will sort of had to start 30 games or more in the division. They've had 8. And I think injuries to a few of the fringe players, Jack Earing, George Hall, was certainly something that we mentioned going into the game last week. They would have got minutes in the midfield and given Matt Saddler the opportunity to shuffle the pack. So I think there's a little bit of fatigue there. There's obviously the loss of the centre forward. They're probably the two main ingredients, not having maybe that depth. And this is a very unusual position, I think, for a team in League 2 to be in, having not been fancied, what were they, 17th, 18th, probably in the betting at the start of the season, to have that lead, it's probably just a little bit of nerves as well.
We'll see if they can overcome those. There's a tasty looking tussle in the promotion race as Bradford take on Colchester. Bantams look like the form horse in the league before back-to-back defeats, where Colchester have been thoroughly cowled and starting to show the benefits of that. And so, Clarkey, even though they haven't won away to Bradford since March 2016, they might feel that they're catching them at the perfect time.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're in form, aren't they? They're absolutely flying. They feel like they can't get beat at the moment. They're not conceding very many goals at all, are they, Colchester? So, they'll back themselves to go there and either keep a clean sheet or let in one goal max. And that gives you a chance of winning any game, doesn't it? They've conceded one or less in 13. They've conceded one or less goals in their last 13 games. So, you know, that's a long stretch where they've been really, really solid. The funny thing is, they've scored one or less in 9 of those 13 games. So, you know, but they're unbeaten. So, you know, if they're not scoring, they're making sure they're keeping a clean sheet. If they score, they're making sure that they let in one max. It's been pretty impressive. McDonald's has been out, who's been their best player in midfield, really, really important player. And Tavide, who we were bigging up the other day, was missing for the last game, but then they still went out and beat Fleetwood, you know. 5 wins in a row and 5 wins in 14 days as well, which is probably even more impressive. So yeah, they just want to keep rolling that wave, or riding that wave, I should say, at the moment. Colchester United, brilliant on the break, really, really lively, got some good pace in forward areas, and they've got a defence that is tough to breach. So that's a good formula, isn't it, when you're away from home? You know, absorb a little bit of pressure, we'll back ourselves, and then bang, we'll go and hurt you. So yeah, I'll give them a chance of extending their unbeaten run at Bradford.
Sam, you spoke about nerves maybe affecting Walsall. Is that what's happening with Bradford too? Because I'm struggling to explain otherwise how you lose back-to-back games without scoring to Gillingham and Tranmere.
well, it's maybe been coming at home because they'd won 10 straight at Valley Parade. So I think you can allow them that. For me, it's pretty simple. The leading scorer, obviously, Andy Cook's been out for a large portion now. The three top scorers below him, all injured for certainly the last game. Poynton, Sarsavic and Patterson. So it's a patched up attack. Didn't create much in the defeat to Gillingham, a little bit more against Tranmere, but I think that's having a huge knock-on effect. They brought in Mellon to essentially be the replacement for Andy Cook, and I think he's done okay in flashes, but he's not bringing the same goal threat. And Cavan has been on the bench as well recently, another bright young player, but I think it's as simple as that, really. They've found a bit of a formula in the absence of Cook, early part of his absence, with those aforementioned players rotating nicely, slightly different look to the attack, which caused a lot of teams problems. And that has sadly fallen by the wayside. So they'll have to be on it here, because Colchester, incredibly strong away from home. And Bradford, all of a sudden, a few questions when I think everyone would have been looking at them and saying they are a shoo-in for the top three. So this is a bit of a 50-50 game. I'd maybe even say Colchester slight favourites.
We shall see. Should be a good one. All right. No championship action this weekend, but we thought that we'd scout a couple of players just to keep our hand in. And we are going to start, Sam, with Idemu Emaku, who is not somebody I was that familiar with. Turns out that he is a 12-cap Republic of Ireland under-21 international. What's drawn you to the Millwall man?
Well, what's drawn me is that I was witness to one of the worst games of the season at the Den at the weekend. Certainly not one for the purists against Stoke. Some decent performers in...
Worse than Burnley Leeds, could I just ask that?
On a par. I mean, that one's a bit hazy. Yeah, I'd probably say I preferred Millwall Stoke, actually. Yeah, being put on the spot. First half, certainly the worst I'd seen. Stoke had a decent period in the second, didn't get their goal, and obviously Millwall snatched it at the death. But Emaku, I thought, was really bright for an hour. And it's funny because he hasn't scored since August 23. It was a consolation at Norwich, and he made the goal on the open day. That's the opening day that season for SA's first goal in a Millwall shirt. But since then, it's been kind of sporadic appearances and sporadic goal involvements. This season, he's got a couple of assists against Sunderland and Watford, very similar, going on the outside on his weaker left foot. He plays wide left and pulling balls back nicely to be finished off. He's a bit of a throwback. And I'm going to try and give you a comparison. I've come up with a list of wingers here: Luis Figo, Matt Jarvis, Stuart Ripley, Andy Impey. Not blessed with loads of flair, I would say, tricks, but really effective. Kind of head down, shoulders over, and kind of just running at people. Incredibly direct. He has got the chop, which he did to good effect at the weekend, kind of faking to cross with his left, cutting infield onto his right to get a couple of efforts away. So, yeah, he was probably, in terms of attacking impetus, Millwall's bright spark from the weekend. 21 now. Don't think Neil Harris played him early part of the season. I think there was a suspension, had a few minutes off the bench. I think it was David Livermore that actually put him in for his first start of the season. And Alex Neil has played him certainly in two and a half of the last three games. Really good at Watford recently. Two-footed, gets to the byline. Tired after about 65-70 minutes and was withdrawn when kind of run out of puff. But yeah, another young player at Millwall, who another young winger at Millwall who can probably step in and add some valuable quality, as Bangura Williams is doing on the opposite flank, and as Eze did to brilliant effect early part of the season. Are you still confused about that list of wingers I gave you?
It's just nice to hear Andy Impey's name, to be perfectly honest. The inglorious spell at Nottingham Forest.
I think Figo's the best, because I think Figo, was he deployed off the left quite a lot of his career and didn't really have a trick, did he? Do you know what I mean? He was just kind of like head down, got the team up the pitch, delivered either foot. Do you know what I mean there? No step over, really, was there with Figo?
Yeah, okay, I'll take that.
Clarkey?
I think you're being harsh on Figo, but he had a bit in his locker, didn't he?
He had a bit in his locker, but...
Yeah, he was more of a drop of the shoulder kind of guy.
Yeah,
I've got what you're saying.
Yeah. And go either side, yeah.
I'm sort of cut from a similar cut. I'd like to think I had quick feet, but really, it's about upper body. I think for wingers, it's about shifting your upper body in a really sort of... That sounds weird, but you just got to throw some shapes.
I think maybe Matt Jarvis is the best, but Matt Jarvis was rapid, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Matt was like... Just he could go out and in, and it was just a drop of the shoulder, wasn't it?
I had one of the slowest drop of the shoulders in history,
right,
and it
Chris
worked
Waddle.
A lot. It worked loads because just defenders don't like it. I don't know what it is, but there you go.
All right, well, you have just taken about 50% of the time off your scouting report with that wingers from the 90s and noughties chat. But tell me a little bit, Clarkie, about Eliza Mayenda of Sunderland.
I've worked on a few Sunderland games this season, and he's caught my eye. Not least last time I was at Hillsborough, I saw him get a score twice against Sheffield Wednesday. He's 19 and he's got 7 goals, 5 assists this season. In terms of direct goal contributions, he leads the way at Sunderland this season on a per 90 basis. You know, he's way ahead of Isidore and Mundo. He's got good end product. He reminds me a little bit of Jermaine Defoe. He's a bit bigger. I think he's 5'11". But what he's good at, he's so good at seeing space and working space and darting into space. A little bit like Jermaine was. He makes those little runs off the shoulder of defenders in behind. And once he's there, he can finish. He can really finish left foot or right foot. He's left-footed, but he can finish with his right. He's a low-touch player, as is Isidore, by the way. So it won't really link the play that often. They don't use him as a target man, but he's just always there loitering, waiting to make a little darting run into the box to make something happen. And he can run with the ball at his feet as well. So, yeah, I really, really like the way he stays in space, sees space, and then run, you know, gets himself into it. He's a good finisher. He's sharp. He can head it as well. I saw him score a great header at Hillsborough that day, run off the shoulder of the defender to nod it in excellently. So, yeah, look, if you've got a 19-year-old striker that scores goals, assists goals, and is a constant headache for his markers, and who can play as a striker, which is where he should play, but can do a job out wide and certainly can play in number 10 role as that sort of guy that makes runs in beyond. If you've got a 19-year-old that can do all of that, it's gold. And do you know how much he cost? Less than a mil from Sochaux. So he has to go down for me as one of the signings of the season. And he's going to be worth an awful lot of money to Sunderland moving forwards. But in the here and now, he's worth a lot to them on the pitch.
Well, see if he can help fire them back to the Premier League. There you go. Then that was the return of the scouting report. And we're nearly done, but let's whip through some predictions before we go. Last week, Sam and Adrian got 2 points. I just got the one. So Sam continues to hold a commanding lead in the overall totals. This week, Barnsley, Cambridge. As you're the front runner, Sam, I'll let you go first here.
Oh, mate, these are hard this week. Cambridge are gone, aren't they? Barnsley are in a little bit of disarray, terrible at home. Cambridge to get something after Neil Harris's war cry. Was it a war cry? I know it was more of a rant, wasn't it? 1-1 at Oakwell.
Okay, I was going to say get something even better than that. I think 0-1 Cambridge win. What about you, Clark?
Do you? Yeah, yeah. I think we're all sort of along the same lines. You can't trust Barnsley. I think we're all basically saying that. It's definitely not at home. And I think Harris will get something out of the game. I'm going to go for something slightly more exciting. 2-2 on the back of my very close shave with Swindon Cheltenham, which didn't get a mention, which was disappointing. I think I said 3-2, didn't I, to one of the teams, and it finished 3-3. I'm going to go with a 2-2er at Oakwell, Barnsley, Cambridge.
All right, and you can have first dibs on the next game, which is Lincoln against Exeter.
Yeah, Exeter on a nice little unbeaten run, not letting in many goals, but Lincoln have had a couple of thumping wins at Sintel Bank lately. This time, I think it'll be tighter for them. It's not going to be a thrashing. I think they'll get the job done. Lincoln 1, Exeter 0.
Sam?
Yeah, I agree. We should do a little deep dive on Lincoln after that run at the back end of last season, and we've not mentioned them too readily on the podcast, so maybe they're going to do it again. Just win every game, 5-0 to the end of the season. Yeah, I fancy them here despite Exeter's good run there, pulling themselves away from trouble. 2-1 to the Imps.
Okay, I'll go... Oh, let's just go 2-2, why not? And I'll go first on Notts County Crewe. Notts a bit unconvincing of late, and I think I might stumble here too. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. What do you think, Sam?
Don't mind it, but I will go with home advantage. Crucial time of the season. 2-0, Notts County.
Wow. Giving the rail women any hope here, Clarkie?
Nah. They're both patchy. You can't trust Barnsley. You can't trust these teams at the moment. Win one, draw one, lose one. You don't know what you're going to get. I think Notts have lost their last two at home, which makes me fancy them more. So I'm going to go Notts County 2, Crewe 1.
All right, just about done for today. Let me remind you again, though, that our partners Quinbet have an offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35. Minimum 3 bets plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. A quick tweet to finish then. It comes from Tenai Watson, who says, great 3 points, prayer emoji, buzzing to be back out there. Fans were brilliant. Red heart emoji, white heart emoji. And he tags in his club at CAFC official. It's just route one, isn't it, Sam? But exactly what it should be.
This, in a nutshell, is why we got into the business of this. It's there, buzzing. It's got to be the most used word in this manner. Fans were brilliant. Textbook. And again, probably revert to one of our first series of this podcast. Would he have sent a tweet if he'd have come back into the team and had the proverbial stinker? I think we all know the answer to that. And this is why we got into the business. And there's a couple of lovely replies. Chris Reader. Josh has been amazing. I fear we would miss him, but you were immense tonight. Backhanded compliment if ever I've heard one. And then a very modern tweet from Alex Gleeson. New trim, new player. All down to his new Barnet. But it's gorgeous. It's what we wanted. It's what we come for.
He's fishing for compliments, Clarkie, and he's got them by the barrelful.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. That is the term that I had on my lips, ready to go. So you've read my mind. It's absolutely fishing for compliments. And he got plenty, didn't he, from the Valley Massive. It's a very boring tweet for me. It's it's come straight out of the textbook footballer tin, hasn't it? But I'm pleased for him that he's got the sort of ego boost that he was looking for.
Yeah, well done, Tenai. All right, that's where we're going to leave it for today. Leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. All helps us grow the show and we would appreciate it. We shall be back next week looking ahead to the glorious return of the championship. For now, from Adrian, from Sam and from me, it's goodbye.